important as that. I can't think of anything more important. You know, when, look, I counsel my family, my wife, my daughter, on situational awareness. And she, look, we've had some incidents, folks. Let me tell you something. We've had some situations where, situational awareness has saved our lives. I truly believe that. I could tell you some stories. I'm not going to bore you with them. But the man on the other end of this is Bob Griswold. He's the man behind Ready Made Resources. It's our go-to company for all things preparation related. And you know what, folks? Now is the time. If you're listening to this and you're the head of the family out there, I would urge you, like I've done, I've gone through every inch of their website. Okay? And let me tell you, night vision is so important. Communications are so important. Yeah, you might look at it and say, wow, it's a little cost prohibitive. But you know what? I suspect maybe you might be getting an income tax refund back. I don't know. But do yourself a favor. Go to Ready Made Resources. Go to Bob Griswold's site. The link is on Hagman Report. Please, please get prepared. Bob, I'm going to turn it back over to you, sir.
Well, and you know, anybody, I'm going to make this offer to anybody who purchases a night vision tonight from listening to this program. I'm going to include a free Bofang F8 radio, ham radio, with it. So that'll come with it. We also have our rifle-mounted PBS-30 scope marked down. It is that thing that is expensive. It is a cost-prohibitive item to a lot of families, but it does give you the ability to stay situationally aware 24 hours a day when it's dark outside. The modern night vision cuts through the darkness, and you can see clearly hundreds of yards away from your position. It allows you to operate in your area of operation very, very effectively. If people are trying to do something to you, you can see them. Should their need arise, you can actually drive a car with it. Again, don't do it unless it's absolutely crisis, because I don't want to be the guy telling the police officer why I'm driving down the street with my headlights off and night vision on. You know, it allows you to hunt at night. Again, generally illegal, but animals do come out. I do a lot of night vision hiking. They come out at night. So we will make that offer to anybody who purchases a night vision device this evening. We'll include a free Bofang radio with the purchase. Again, I'm available for consultation. I don't charge for it. You can call me at the 800 number, 627-3809. I'll be glad to talk with you about your security needs and how to develop a situationally aware presence for your family. But you really need to put it into practice and start immediately, because it is, again, it's one of those things, it's like a muscle. The more you exercise it, the stronger it gets and the more endurance it will have. The first time you do that movie night thing, you're going to find yourself completely fatigued. But as you do it over and over again, paying attention to movies, it'll become second nature. It kind of, in some ways, ruins watching a movie, because I'm always watching what's going on in the background. It's just the way my brain has been trained to do it, and I find it to be effective. And in life, it is an extremely effective security procedure that I follow that will greatly lower my chance of being a victim of something coming out of my flank and injuring me or my family. So I just encourage everybody. Night vision does have that prohibitive cost, but I'm telling you, if you ever need it, 1 minute after the balloon goes up, 1 minute after Civil War II starts, 1 minute after they take the grid down, I see right now we have another cyber attack more powerful than the last one going on. 1 minute after the system breaks, it falls down, you're going to wish you had night vision. It'll be the first thing, because the first night you go through not knowing and not seeing what's outside your house will be a very, very scary night. And so with military-grade night vision, that goes away. I can see clearly. It's so good, we tell people, I think we're the only one in the industry that does it. We give you a one-week return policy from the day you sign for it at the door. If you don't think it is what I tell you it is, then return it, and I will give you your money back. So I don't think anybody else does that with night vision.
Just put the exclamation point on that, Bob. Your night vision equipment that you've got is second to none, folks. You know, do you have a pet, maybe a pet dog that you let out outside? I can tell you this, about a week and a half ago at my home, and I live in the suburbs, not rural area, playing around with night vision equipment from Ready Made Resources, and I've had this for a while. I guess what I saw a coyote hidden in the bushes, or hiding in the bushes. Anyway, I don't know if it was hiding, but it was covered by a bush. Had I let my dog out, again, a coyote, on my property. And we had reports of two dogs getting killed, two different occasions, about a mile and a half from me. Had I let Lady the studio dog out, it could have been a very bad night for both Lady and me. So, just think of that. Now, think of also the personal factor with you, your wife, and of course the equalizing factor that these do provide. Bob, go ahead.
Well, you know, even with your dog, they do make little infrared markers that you can attach to your dog collar. That actually, you don't see it unless you have night vision, but it'll actually glow in the dark. You know, if you're a person that has firearms, you can actually mount what's called a D-ball laser. It's a dual beam aiming laser onto your rifle. It actually projects a infrared laser out of the unit. It co-witnesses with your rifle. You put your night vision on your head. If you see something, like if you saw that coyote there, all you do is press that little pressure pad on your weapon, turns the infrared laser on, put it on the dog or the coyote, and you pull the trigger, and that coyote would be history. The aiming laser really benefits you in several ways because, you know, it's a half a second that saves your life in a gunfight. The average person can pull up a gun in a second and a half and shoot. If you have to get it down to a second to be the first guy to win that fight. With a D-ball aiming laser, you don't even have to shoulder the weapon. If you've got it at low ready, you just point it, and whenever that laser touches that target, the thing that's being lased won't see it, but you'll see it, and you just pull the trigger. It is a very, very effective weapons platform. It's what the military uses. If anybody's seen the movie 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, you'll see them using those D-ball lasers in there. Very, very effective. But you can actually add an infrared tag to your dog. It's a little sticky thing, and it's like a chemical light, but it glows infrared. Attach it to your dog. You'll see your dog glowing. He'll be glowing like a Christmas tree around through the woods. It makes it very easy to spot him. But anyhow, if people have questions, 800-627-3809. I'll be glad to work with you. I'll be glad to give you the benefit of my experience and making sure your family can be secure. I'm going to be praying for peace. I'm going to be praying for my president. I'm going to be praying that God grants us the mercy we do not deserve. But if things go in a way I think there's a very strong possibility they will, I want to be in the position of providing for my family. You know, some people say they're going to have faith, but I look at probably the greatest act of faith in the Bible, other than this work of Jesus Christ, was the building of the ark. And yet the building of the ark took the greatest human endeavor. It was faith and works together, and Noah provided for his family with that ark, and he saved his family by his endeavor and his effort. So faith alone is, I hate to say it because I don't want to sound sacrilegious, but faith alone, I don't see it in the Bible where it has much value. Faith usually requires us to do something. Same thing with Joseph. Faith required him to act and to store food. I think those parallels are very appropriate for the days in which we live. Not only do we see our nation in turmoil, but you know, our friend Dave Hodges just wrote that article. The globalists have brought 22 possibly catastrophic events to our doorstep. 22 incidences, wars and dissensions, seditions that are coming against our country right now. And so it's just not the fact that Donald Trump might be impeached. It's the fact that we have an 1860 moment, a Civil War moment possibly going to happen, and we have a 1913 moment, a global war possibly going to happen. On top of that, we have a seditious fifth element in our government that's comprised of education, it's comprised of news media, it's comprised of deep state agents, GS9, GS10 people. Trump has them in his own White House. We are truly a house divided against itself, as Abraham Lincoln pondered back so many years ago. And we need to pray, but we need to act upon that and get our families ready for what I think history teaches us is almost unavoidable at this time.
That's the way it looks, Mr. Griswold. I want to thank you for coming on. We got to go. We have a guest that we got to get to. But thank you so much for coming on and sharing that with us tonight. Robert Griswold, Ready-Made Resources, readymaderesources.com. Man. If you're looking on YouTube, the number's there, 1-800-627-3809 is the number, or readymaderesources.com. Mr. Griswold, thanks for coming on. We look forward to having you on again in the future.
God bless.
Have a good night. And folks, Bob Griswold is a man who will spend some time talking to you about your security surveillance and preparedness needs. He's a great man, and I'll tell you what, people pay big bucks for his knowledge, which you just got there. You might think, well, boy, I could have thought of that. Well, you didn't. So pay attention. And our thanks go out to Bob Griswold, Ready Made Resources, and do call him. And mention you heard him on Hagman. Him on Hagman and Hagman Report, because hey, you know, we get kudos too. We like that too.
Yes, we do. So we're gonna obviously stay on air as we bring in our next guest. Her name is Misty Griffin, and she's got a fascinating story. Tears of the Silenced: A True Crime and American Tragedy, Severe Child Abuse and Leaving the Amish publication, and we're going to get into this with Misty Griffin.
She came across our radar, Joe. She's got that story that she's got is so interesting, and people don't really understand the, dare I say, cult. Would cult be improper?
Yeah,
I mean,
no,
I don't know. Cult, like, if you...
Would you call the priest inside Catholic Church who molest children a cult?
I don't think I would, only because... Now, man, I'll tell you what.
I would.
Okay. Technically, I suppose you could, the connotations of that in especially in that context might be objectionable, at its face. I don't think you're going to win friends or win the argument. I shouldn't say friends. I don't think you are going to prevail in getting the message across by using that particular word in that context, in that situation. But I think you're technically accurate, yes. Before we get to our guest, folks, Greenovative, greenovative.com, ready-made, or GMAG. Thank you, Eric. The GMAG Power Cell. Alan Riggs has done it. He's actually got us extended use power cells. I mean, folks, just go to greenovative.com. Check out what Alan Riggs has done. Greenovative.com. When you don't have batteries and you need them, oh man, doesn't that really mess with your head? Well, Alan Riggs has developed this product. It's EMP proof. It's got no moving parts. A little salt, a little water. You can charge rechargeable batteries. Now he's gotten more power out of the power pucks. It's the GMAG Power Cell. Thanks, Eric. Give him a call, 321-638-4855, or go to greenovative.com. That's greenovative.com. But whatever you do, let's get it done. Get it done now. Jump.
With us now is Miss author Misty Griffin. She left the Amish 12 years ago in 2005. Since then, she has been to Brazil as a missionary. She's been married for 10 years. She's a nursing student and a best-selling author. Misty Griffin, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hello.
Thanks so much for your patience as we kind of ran over the last segment, but we really appreciate having you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Well, where do you want to start? You've got such an amazing story, Misty. Where do you want to start here to give people a little bit of insight from your own lips to the people?
Probably a good place to start is from my early childhood. It shows, like, how I progressed to become Amish since I wasn't born Amish. But, it also raises awareness about child abuse and how easy it is to basically, I guess, become a member of a cult, which I believe the Amish are now.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, go ahead and start, because when I first saw this, you were not born into an Amish family, but you ended up there. How'd that happen?
Yeah, it's quite unusual for somebody to join the Amish from the outside. My sister and I, we were allowed to join because we were basically raised Amish. When I was like 6 years old, My mother and my stepfather, they started making us dress Amish and live Amish. When I was 11, we moved on a ranch in northern Washington State. And we were basically held prisoners there until I was almost 19 years old. And we were, you know, we just like lived on the farm. We dressed Amish. We lived that way. We were taught like all of the doctrines of the Amish. And then my parents were extremely, extremely abusive. We were basically held prisoners there. It was 6.5 miles out of town. And when I was 18 and a half, I tried to escape. I tried to run off the mountain, but they caught me. And I told them that one day I would escape and I would go to the police and turn them in. But, you know, it was so far out of town, I just didn't know how I would get there. It was like 8 miles to the police station. So my sister and I, we didn't really know anything besides the mountain we were held on. And my stepdad had been in contact with an Amish bishop in Pennsylvania for like 10 years or more. And he told him of this community. I can't say like what state, but they were from the Midwest. And they took us to that community and they agreed to adopt us. I was adopted by the bishop's brother, and my sister was adopted by the deacon. And that's how we eventually became church members.
Okay. Man. Folks, Misty Griffin is our guest. She's written a book. You've got to get this book, Tears of the Silence, The True Crime in an American Tragedy. It's on Amazon. It's an amazing book. As a matter of fact, it was published back in December 2014, I believe. Let me just double check. And it's still trying to get number one in the Kindle store on Cults and Demonism. It's really highly rated. It got a number of great reviews, and she's just an incredible young woman. Please pay attention to what she's got to say. So, Misty, go ahead and continue, because this is so important. There are many people with situations like yours. Go ahead and continue.
First of all, I raise awareness about child abuse. I would like to say, like, when I was with my parents, there were a number of people that told me later, after I escaped, they told me that they had thought about calling Child Protective Services, you know, on my parents, because they knew we were being abused, but they never did. And I would just like to say, you know, if you have a suspicion, you know, that something is very wrong, usually it is. I mean, we are given those instincts, and you really need to, like, look into that and try to help that child or person, because they could be living, you know, through something really, really tragic like my sister and I did. And those people, they later apologized to my sister and I for not calling Child Protective Services. But my parents were just really good at hiding, you know, what they were doing. Then we were taken to the Amish community. We visited the community about 6 or 7 times before I went to live there. They said that they would give me a trial period first of about almost a year, and then my sister, who is younger, she's a year and 10 months younger, she would also come to the community. So I went first. It was the week after 9/11, and I basically, you know, went to meet my Amish family. I had to learn all the rules. There is a rule for everything. People on the outside don't realize that, but there is literally a rule for everything, all the way down to your underwear. So, you know, I had to conform to the dress code, but I had been raised in such a strict environment, it wasn't that hard for me. There was a lot of rules that I had to learn. I had to learn German. It took me about 8 to 9 months before I was fluently speaking German. I had to learn to read it. And then, you know, I was basically integrated into the Amish. My sister came about 9 months later also.
So, Misty, this was something your parents wanted for you guys, is to take...
No.
Okay, how'd that happen?
Well, because I had tried to escape, their idea was, we learned this later, my sister found this out right before she came to the Amish. Their plan was that I would not make it in the Amish community and they would send me back, and therefore we would never try to escape again. Because, you know, they told us our whole life we were failures, we were ugly, nobody wanted us, not even the state wanted us. You know, they lied to the state so many times. My mom told the state that I had run to Canada when I was 15 with my boyfriend. And social services, they never came and checked on us like they were supposed to. And, you know, we were just there the whole time. Sorry. So their plan was, they thought I would be sent back. But it didn't work out that way. They never expected me to learn German so fast or to fit in with the community.
Okay. So you become a member of this Amish community, and your sister becomes a member of the Amish community a little bit later. What happens next?
So, to get into the sad part, like, I was there for just a couple of weeks when the bishop of the church, like, started making advances towards me. But then I moved. I was at his house to help clean for church, and he did some very, like, odd things. He scared me a little bit. But then I moved into his brother's house. That was my adopted family. And he didn't really have access to me for a long time. But there were people that started coming to me, you know, telling me about sexual abuse stories. And I saw some of it personally. So I started getting worried. And one of the girls in our community, her sister had been molested when she was 14 by an outsider. He dressed Amish, but he lived among the Amish, and the Amish didn't report him. And he, like, really messed with her. She was a little bit messed up after that. So that was the first story that I heard, and it was really hard to hear these stories because, you know, I knew these girls. And then the bishop's wife, she started telling me what happened to her. She came from a family of about 11 children, and I think 9 of them were girls, somewhere around there. And her father was a deacon in the church, and he had molested all of the daughters. The oldest daughter, her first child, is her father's child. So she was telling me this. She wasn't allowed to tell me, so I wasn't allowed to, like, repeat it. But he was shunned by the church 5 times. Her mom went to the church 5 times to report him. He was shunned 5 times, each time for 6 weeks. And he just continued, and finally they just stopped reporting him.
Missy, I didn't mean to interrupt, but how old was he and how old were you at this time, roughly?
At that time I was about 19 years old, and the bishop was, I think, about 35.
Okay.
He was a young bishop.
All right. Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
The shunning. So this is the church. Somebody brings this issue to the church, to the congregation or to the elders, and their response is to basically put him on the sideline for 6 weeks, and after multiple allegations, that approach didn't change?
That's it, man, right?
Yes, so the Amish, they have no other form of punishment. This is their own form of punishment. And they believe, so their only form of punishment is shunning. And it's usually 2 to 6 weeks. It doesn't matter your crime. Basically you are put away from the church for 6 weeks. You can't, like, sit with church members at church. You can't eat with anybody. You can't eat at the same table, even in your own home, if there's church members present. And that, you can't go to any social events, and that's for 2 to 6 weeks, depending on what the bishop decides.
And that is the punishment. Folks, we're talking with Misty Elaine Griffin. She left the Amish community 12 years ago, escaped, rather, back in April of 2005. Since then, she's been to Brazil as a missionary. Oh, thank you for your service. Been married for 10 years. She's a nursing student and a best-selling author. Her book, Tears of the Silence, the true crime and American tragedy, severe child abuse and leaving the Amish. It's a fantastic read. Her passions include all humanitarian work and, of course, reading and animals. She raises awareness about child abuse and making the world see what can happen when someone just shrugs off the urge to report suspected child abuse and sexual assault. How incredible. And Misty, we're just so thankful that you're joining us.
We're right at the point. You know,
we're going to skip the bottom of the hour break, by the way, folks, and let Misty have that time. Go ahead, Jeff.
You know, the question, why is sexual abuse allowed to flourish in the Amish community? And I guess the answer would be because there's no real consequences for the crimes that are committed.
Yes. So the Amish, they believe that once you have been shunned by the church and you have been forgiven of that crime, no church member is allowed to speak of that crime after that. So say you were shunned because you molested your daughter or, you know, something. After you have been taken back in the church, nobody is allowed to talk of that, ever. It's like it never happened. So, basically, they can't, like, hold you accountable for anything until, like, it comes up again. And then you're shunned again. And, you know, it just keeps going. There's no other form of punishment. So, I mean, that never stops a child molester or rapist. I mean, it is such a light punishment. And the whole time, like, if they are molesting, like, their children, they are in the same house with those children. And if they have been reported once and it didn't really help, the likelihood of somebody reporting it again is very unlikely. In the case of the bishop's mom, she did go to the church 5 times. I mean, that is quite unusual. I think it's because she had so many daughters that were getting molested. But, you know, the bishop's wife, she told me, you know, it's so hard to see your, like, father up there crying, you know, saying he's sorry, and you know he's going to do it again. And the whole time, you know, nobody comes to the children. They don't ask them, are you okay? You know, do you need help? Do you need to talk? Somebody who's been sexually assaulted in the Amish, they're not allowed to talk about it with anybody, ever. You're just supposed to be quiet.
Well, it seems like a lot of people in that community know what's going on, whether from sharing of personal stories or observing something or being victimized by something. How come there's not more policing inside the Amish community amongst themselves? How come they don't? What's the problem with outing or reporting one of their congregants to the police if this is such? I mean, it's obviously a terrible thing that happens. It should never happen. And when it does happen, it violates the law and it violates the biblical law also. Why isn't there more action taken? Why don't more people come together and speak out about it?
From within that community, right? Okay.
A lot of people don't... Well, there's one thing that a lot of people don't realize about the Amish. You know, right now you have, like, a lot of romance stories written about the Amish. It just looks like this ideal life. But what outsiders do not realize is that the Amish really view them as outsiders. I mean, they view them as, you know, if you are not Amish, you're kind of just not existent or like aliens. I mean, to them, you don't really mean anything. And among the Amish, especially the strict order that I come from, the Bible is something that is not encouraged at all. Like, you can get shunned for reading the Bible.
Really?
People don't realize that in the Amish, the ordinal, which is the list of church rules, that is the highest rule. That is what you obey. Morality is not something that is really taught among the Amish. Kindness, you know, not participating in, like, you know, I guess, like, I don't know, really bad things. That is something that's not taught among the Amish. The main thing that is taught among the Amish is obeying the ordinal. If you obey that, you are considered a very good church member. And, you know, things like molestation, rape, those things are not in the ordinal. So, I mean, it's very odd, but that is like a side, something on the side that, you know, you just get shunned for, and people don't want to even recognize it's happening. But to go to the police is like a really bad sin, because you are contacting the outside. Like, when I went to the police, like, it was a very, it was like the worst thing I could do, because they're the outsiders.
But the worst thing you could do for who? For yourself? For the community? Explain that a little bit more, because I would, and here's against the backdrop of this, about 8-9 years ago, in near our community, we had a member of the Amish, near where I live, that is, we had a member of the Amish community, a man, come home one day, I don't know what exactly what the motive was, but stabbed and disemboweled his wife.
Oh, yes, I know that story.
Okay. But having said all of that, bad for who? Bad for the community? Bad for the person reporting it? But is there some antagonism between the police and the Amish community, or just go ahead and expand on that? I don't want to keep throwing stuff at it.
It's seen as bad for the community, because among the Amish, only, like, you're baptized when you're about 16 and 17 in the stricter, like, the stricter communities I come from. After that, you become a church member, and anything that is said among church members is not allowed out of that circle. So if you go and tell an outsider who is not Amish something that was said among church members after church, you will be shunned. So basically, they don't want anybody knowing church business, basically, at all. So if you were to go tell the police, you know, this church member did this to me, you are committing like a shunnable offense, because they think everything should be handled by the church among themselves, because, you know, everybody else is an outsider. So the police are considered worldly. Any kind of law enforcement, they really don't believe that they have to abide by American laws, and there are many that they don't.
Misty, let me stop you right there and ask you this question. Mm-hmm. Do you see some parallels here? And maybe I'm seeing parallels where none exist, but do you see parallels between what you just said and, for example, the Muslim community, those who do not assimilate into Western culture, you see the parallels there?
Yeah. Basically, any culture that's, like, ultra strict and removes themselves from the rest of society, it's kind of the same thing. Like, the fundamentalist Mormons, you know, the Amish, anything that considers everybody else an outsider, that you don't consider your equal, I mean, that's kind of how it is. They all have, like, the same, I don't know how you would say, like, the same rules, like, the same thoughts about outsiders, I guess.
All right, okay, interesting, all right. Okay, now, wow, man. You know, I'm tongue-tied almost. I read your story. I know your story. I'm looking at this, and it really affects me emotionally. I mean, I get emotional over this. I mean, the sexual abuse that was allowed to flourish within the community, the people, the lack of good people who should have stepped in to stop it, mothers, sisters, uncles, and so on. And the fact that they didn't step in because of, I would say, community standing, right? I mean, that's...
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, the lack of punishment for the crime outside or within the community as well is just astounding to me. But yet here you are, and by the way, folks, her book is fantastic, and I definitely would recommend it. Tears of the Silence. Go on Amazon.com and get all of that book. And our thanks to Bill McIntosh from Akasa Media as well. But go ahead, Misty. We don't want to dominate here. Continue on with the story, hitting the high points you think are most important for our listeners and viewers today? How you might be able to relate to them or give them perhaps advice or suggestions? Because we've got people in that position. I know we do, who are stuck in that cycle. Go ahead.
Right now, I have my email in my book, and every day I get like a lot of emails from people who are in bad situations or who have just gotten out of bad situations. So I know there are a lot of people, Amish and non-Amish, that are looking for help. And I know for me, I was in a bad situation for a long time, and I had nowhere to turn. You know, I had nobody that I felt would help me. So, you know, I just stayed in that situation for a long time. And I would just say to anybody out there, you know, if you feel that somebody is in a bad situation, the best thing you can do is be their friend. And if you can get to them and be their friend and they feel like they trust you, then they might open up. And once they open up and tell their story, then you can help them out of that situation. But it's usually impossible to just like reach in and grab somebody out of the situation because they might go back because they're scared. And I think the best thing you can do is show that, you know, you're a good friend and, you know, you would do anything to help them. I think that's the best way to help somebody.
Yeah, and I read some of the comments that you received on your book and some of your responses, and it makes a lot of sense that, especially in a closed community like that, that some outsider would not be able to just come in and make heads or tails or get cooperation or information. So the second best thing to do would be to start assimilating with the community. Mm-hmm. and get in that way. Back to your story, Misty. So you're in a house and you're in a situation where you're being molested by the church bishop. Then you turn this man into the police.
Yes.
Again, what happened after you turned him into the police?
So to start with, the Amish family that I was adopted into, there was some problems among like the husband and wife. So the bishop agreed with this couple that it would be a good idea if I went to their house and became their maid for a few months to give the husband and wife, you know, some time to work out their problems. So I really didn't have a choice, and the bishop's wife was my friend, you know, so I agreed to do it, even though I was kind of scared of him. But so I moved into their house, and right away he just started, you know, molesting me. But I couldn't tell anybody because, especially being an outsider, you know, women, it's, you know, if women come forward, they are usually told why it's their fault. And as an outsider, I had to be extra careful because I had already gotten in trouble several times, you know, for not wearing my head covering forward far enough, because I attracted attention because I was an outsider, so I was different, or wearing my dress too tight. So I was just quiet about it, and I tried to avoid him. You know, this went on for about 6 months. And then one morning he came into my room and he assaulted me, he threatened me, and I had seen him like doing something inappropriate with his daughter, his oldest daughter.
Oh man.
Oh yeah. So I thought to myself, it's like, this has gone on for 6 months, and he told me he was going to come back during the night. So, you know, I was thinking to myself, you know, what if I get pregnant? You know, I have to do something about this, especially to save his daughter. So we had this lady living on our property. She was non-Amish, but she was she had a horse rescue, and she was quite close. She was like, she lived in a shop about 100 or 200 yards from where my bedroom was.
Right.
So I ran down to her to get help, and she took me to the police. But the police, you know, they kind of didn't want to believe me. They're like, you know, we haven't really heard this kind of a story from, you know, about Amish before.
Sorry for that. But isn't that funny? Because folks, if you follow that, the thread of Misty's account, well, it's Misty's fault for the way she dressed or whatever. It's Isn't it funny, funny, sadly ironic, you've got the women's marches, of course, and compare what you're hearing from Misty to the women's marches. Without taking too much time, you'll understand what I'm talking about, but she's not being believed. She's being blamed as the victim. The police... Okay, so the police said, well, I never heard of this kind of behavior coming from this community before. So they look at you and kind of don't believe you, right? That had to be...
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I had told them that he was the bishop of the church, and, you know, they were kind of like, well, you know, we don't want to take that kind of too seriously, you know, because he is the bishop, you know, they're our friends, you know, they consider them like there's no crime among the Amish, they think. Hmm. So, you know, they did come out and they questioned him, you know, like a few hours later, they questioned him and then they left. And I was too scared to stay in the house, so I stayed with this lady that had the horse rescue. And a couple weeks later, or a little while later, I went to Seattle to stay with my stepdad's sister. And the bishop, I was talking to detectives during this time, and they finally decided to go out and arrest him. And he went out to arrest him, and he was gone. He had taken his whole family, and they had escaped into Canada. And there was no way to, like, track him. I mean, he has no identification at all.
Wow. Maybe this is not germane to the story, but how in the world did he get into Canada? Did the Amish get a free pass?
Yes.
They do?
Yes, they do. They have the family Bible, and they write down the mother, the father. They write down all of the children's names, and that's their identification.
My word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he was in Canada, and I had no way to find him. And then this is kind of the amazing part of the story. A year ago, the book had been out for about a year and a half. And then on Goodreads, I get this message from this person that says he knows the bishop's oldest daughter and she wants to talk to me. So I give him my email. She emails me, and it's the oldest daughter. They had come back from Canada. Canada actually wanted to deport them after they had been there for 2 years. So they came back into the United States, and they lived on the brother's farm, the bishop's brother's farm. And finally, like in 2015, the oldest daughters, they decided that they needed help because the bishop had been molesting all of the children this whole time, even while I... there. He had been shunned by the community before I had even gotten to the community, like 2 years before. So the entire community knew what kind of person he was.
No one stepped up and said, whoa, there's a problem here.
No. He had been shunned for 6 weeks, and then that was the end of it.
All right. And you know what, Missy, this kind of rips my heart out, because you, other victims that went through the same ordeal as you, whether it's in the Amish community or elsewhere, man, you talk about rubbing salt in a wound. That's the ultimate thing. Okay. Any arrests in the future? I know the answer to this, but I mean, any,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So the oldest three daughters, they, told this lady that they knew this lady was a good friend of theirs. And they told her, you know, that their dad had been molesting them. The mother, she knew about it, of course. And so this outside lady, she called Child Protective Services. And then they decided it was a pretty severe case. So they called the police. And the detective who was called in on the case, he was actually reading my book at the time. And he told the social worker, he's like, I think this book is about this person that we're investigating. So they showed the book to the oldest daughter, and she recognized me right away. And she's like, oh, yeah, that's Emma, you know, because I took care of them for a long time. And that's how they contacted me. And last August, he was sent to prison for 10 years.
Wow, okay. And that's kind of something. It's pretty interesting that the detective reading your book.
Yeah.
Wow, that to me, that's kind of a God thing, I think. in a big way. Well, okay. Wow. How are you? First of all, I think you're an inspiration. Thank you for being the inspiration that you are. To this would, what she went through would, could, I should say, paralyze a lot of people mentally, you know, and emotionally paralyze a lot of people. So thank you for being, for not letting that paralysis or not being paralyzed by your past. I mean, this is fantastic. Not only that, but coming out and helping others as well who are in the same or similar positions as yourself. And that's just so fantastic. But you know what? I look at your situation, and after reading your book, again, folks, our guest Missy Griffin, and her book, of course, is Tears of the Silenced. Get that on Amazon. I look at the situation, and I see that, well, there are other women in similar situations, very high profile. I mean, Hillary, look, well, I shouldn't say it. The victims of Bill Clinton, for example. Maybe that's kind of a stretch, but you know, society. So what am I trying to say? Society really has been aggressive toward the victims of, for example, Bill Clinton. And I'm seeing the so-called feminist movement not providing any help to people like our guest, and of course,
well, no, because that's not what it's about,
right?
And we know that, but, you know, Misty, before, I want to make sure we ask you this before we let you go. What are things our radio show, listeners to our radio show, others who are out there who might hear this, can do to help both the Amish and non-Amish victims?
Well, first of all, I think, I'm not sure why, but the world in general seems to want to sort of turn a blind eye to abuse. I've heard, like, since I've been out of the Amish, I've heard lots of people say, you know, it's not your business, you know, don't get into it, you know, it's not your family, not your problem. And I think the whole world should think of everybody as their problem. You know, everybody should be your problem, and you know, you should be concerned for them, because you know, especially children, that is your future generation. And if they are being abused, you know, they are going, most likely going to be I don't know, maybe not mentally stable, or you know, messed up, yeah, in some way. And I think that people should just keep their eyes open, and if they think something is wrong, they should do something about it and not just look the other way. I know in my case, there were so many people that could have helped me, so many people I came in contact with, that I was too scared to ask them for help, but I gave them sort of like cues, you know, like nurses. They're, you know, one time I went into the doctor's office, all of the skin was off my feet, and you know, as a nursing student now, I know that, you know, nurses, they are supposed to report that. And nobody reported it. And there were just a lot of people that could have, but didn't.
What happened with your sister?
Yeah.
Oh, she's Amish. She got married, like, a few months after I left the Amish. She got married. She has three children now.
Do you talk to her, or do you keep in touch? And is there any animus or tension between you and your sister?
Yeah, there's a lot of tension. I'm shunned by the Amish, and she is Amish, so she's forced to shun me. We write, you know, once every two months, but
wow.
I don't really know her anymore.
Sounds like Hollywood cult religion, Scientology.
Yeah,
sounds like some of the stories you hear from there about, you know, pitting the family against family.
Yeah, pretty, it's very insane, similar to that.
Wow. Well, Missy, in the final moments here that we have together, what can you say to other women out there, perhaps in the what's your message to other women who are perhaps victims of abuse currently, previous, maybe? What do you recommend? What would you tell women who are in this situation or finding themselves in similar situations to you? What would you say to the women? that would be helpful to them in handling what you went through?
So, I guess it's always hard because you never know, you know, each person's situation is so different. In my case, you know, when I think back, you know, I think I should have reported the bishop right away, but I was too scared. I was thinking about myself. It was only when I started thinking about the children that I came forward and was able to report, you know, this person. But I think all women, anybody who's being abused should realize, you know, just because you get out of a situation does not mean that the abuse has stopped. And I think you should always report the abuser because most likely they will go on to abuse somebody else. And I have gotten so many emails from people, you know, they say, I'm 20 years old, I got away from my dad, he was very abusive, and, you know, I have 3 siblings at home, do you think I should report him? And I say yes, because if he abused you, most likely he has moved on to those other siblings. And I've had people that have went and reported, you know, their abuser because, you know, they think of that. But if you are in an abusive situation, you know, I know the fear that is there. There is always a lot of fear. But I would just encourage you to go to the police or find a friend that can help you and try to get out of that situation. Because for one thing, it's not your fault, even if they tell you it is. I mean, it's never the victim's fault. And, you know, if you can find a friend that can help you, that is the best thing, because they're looking, you know, kind of from the outside, and they can kind of tell you more, I guess, objectively what you should do. Just try to find a way out.
Yeah.
How's the support from your husband, your family right now? I mean, you've obviously, you've made a full recovery to the extent that you've married, right? And have a family? Okay. Your husband's supportive?
Oh, yes, very supportive.
That's great. So there is life after assault, shall we say. Not to make light of it. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, definitely.
Wow. And folks, Misty Griffin, and I want to thank Bill McIntosh for connecting us, and John for connecting this and making this happen. This book this will leave you just, I mean, there's so much. There's information and inspiration, but it's really an emotional thing as well. Tears of the Silence, A True Crime in an American Tragedy, Severe Child Abuse and Leaving the Amish. Many, many people can relate to this. Many have related to this, judging by the over 1,400 comments, nearly a perfect 5-star rating on this very well-written book. And it's been out for, since December 2014. And it's still pushing number one on the Kindle edition in its category. And Misty, you've done such a great job. Thank you for all you've done and continue to do for all of us in terms of spreading the information that you're giving.
Thank you.
God bless you, man. Is there one last thing? Is there, aside from buying the book, is there any other thing we can do to help you out or to raise awareness, your awareness? Do you have a website or a social network or anything like that?
No, I'm still a little, like, technologically impaired. I don't.
Okay.
But, I mean, I have a Twitter page, but I don't really know how to use it that well.
Boy, that's going around. That's fine. So we are going to promote your book. I love the book, and I want to say thank you for being so brave, and thank you for all that you've done, and thanks for appearing with us. And I come back anytime, dear.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a good night.
Wow, what an incredible story. When I read that, it's a good book. But you know, when talking with Misty and then getting. Folks, don't you find that just an amazing thing when you hear about people not helping? Oh, man. I don't know.
I can get in trouble if I say what's on my mind.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, and if I'd go, and that's why I'm tongue-tied, because, you know, what a lovely lady, a young lady, and she went through a lot of junk. Read the book. That's all I gotta say. And
Again, the book is Tears of the Silenced, A True Crime and American Tragedy, Severe Child Abuse and Leaving the Amish.
Again, our thanks to Bill McIntosh of Casa Media. Thank you, Bill, for setting this up. And
this is a tough subject.
I mean, it's a tough subject, but one that many people today have to confront. And as our society, our culture turns more perverse, I got to tell you, it's just very difficult to get over. I'll say this. I was during my PI days, this is kind of anecdotal. During my PI days, I was in Amish country and I had someone under surveillance. All right. So in fact, a guy that owned a lumber mill employed nothing but Amish. They're famous for that, okay, but nothing but Amish. And I got caught conducting surveillance because of rural area. Anyway, my car was identified, so I was trying to get away, and I ended up pulling onto this private road and onto the lumber mill property. Guy came at me with a chainsaw, wanting to cut through my vehicle, because by that time I had amassed a lot of data and such on this man. Not one Amish person would help. They all looked at me and basically, you're on your own, pal. Why? Well, I think the answer is obvious, right? Plus the policeman who responded, because it's a small community, his whole family, except for two, were Amish. I don't know how that works. Almost charged me as opposed to charging the guy with the chainsaw. True story.
We'll be right back after these short messages. Pastor David Langford will be our guest. Don't go anywhere.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the belly of the beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high net worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate investigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in this community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.